Tristan, what day is it today?
I don't know.
It's exactly 0 days since we're both disappointed by Shane Black's Predator.
Yay!
Oh, that's getting panned, mate. Welcome to What's in the Box, the show about new generations, our spider senses tingling, and an actual film.
I was walking down Brick Lane on Saturday with Ash, and we both stopped conversation like midway through like words, looked back, and both of us went at the same time. So Harvey Weinstein. I actually had to physically run past and then just went casually looked over.
what was he like bubbling out of the drains or something, like reforming?
Just oozing out. Christ. No, he looked like he'd ran like through a fucking clothing store in Shoreditch.
Oh, but God, it was just a mess,
it was just a little bit, it was too small, but really close.
How unfortunate for that guy.
Yeah, he clearly knows. There's no way he doesn't know that he looks like Harvey Weinstein.
Global shame magnet Harvey Weinstein spotted. He's trundling along down fucking Curry Mile. Oh, that makes me want a curry so much. I tell you what it doesn't make me want, mate. A massage. Oh, God.
Keep retreading the same kind of horrible...
We've come back to there now, haven't we? That's two bad intros.
Thinking about Mute.
Oh, my God. Are you starting to like Mute? Are you starting to like it?
No, I'm not at all.
Are you sure?
No.
Maybe.
Right, how much do I not need the Apple Watch number 4?
Oh, my God. Have you bought that yet?
No, I haven't. I'm not going to buy it. I don't need it. You don't even use the one that you're wearing.
Yeah, yes, I do, mate.
Although I was going to buy that exact strap because it looks lovely.
I use it for the Breathe app, which helps with any form of anxiety.
Do you actually use a breather?
Yes.
How does that...
No, it doesn't work. It's awful.
Genuinely,
the app.
Genuinely, how does that improve your life?
No, not one bit.
Okay.
Literally, I preferred my old watch that Em got me so much. But I quite like the way that you can control the volume in your earphones from it. You couldn't do that with the other one.
Is that it?
Pretty much, mate.
Wow.
You can pause the podcast and things that you listen to on it. That's not worth 500 quid.
No. Okay. That makes me feel a lot better.
Need to get one, though, because you can't live with the shame of not having one.
No, I can.
You can't, mate.
I'm doing very well with living with the shame without having the watch.
Have you not got have you not got any watch?
No.
Oh, mate.
I stopped wearing a watch when I got a phone. This is the thing. Like, Apple made the watch completely obsolete, and now they're trying to bring it back. And I looked at the heart attack thing because that's really cool.
Yeah.
I'm thinking about sticking them on my parents, like fucking tagging them sharks. But not for me. I'm hoping I don't need the emergency services to come because I'm likely to have a fall.
Oh yeah, the heart attack thing. But that's new, isn't it? But that's weird. Yeah, why would you focus on that?
So that people like us can tag our parents.
What have you been?
To go with us, like generationally, we're going to start wearing these watches and take them into our golden years.
I fucking know. I mean, this has got about 18 months left on it before it just turns into a pile of junk.
That's the thing. I wouldn't spend 500 quid on a really nice, normal, like fucking watch, let alone one that's going to be obsolete in 6 months.
It doesn't feel like good. It doesn't feel expensive. Like, if I spent the same amount of money on an actual watch, I'd be like, fuck me, I can't take this out. Like, what if it gets scratched? But it just feels cheap. It does not feel its price.
I ended up thinking that if I bought it, I would feel bad about myself.
You won't feel bad.
I would. I'd feel dirty.
Because it'll be like paid off in instalments and that shit.
Yeah, but that's...
Forget about it.
That's besides the point. I mean, that's how I bought my Mac, and they do have amazing options, but still.
We haven't done a podcast in a while, have we?
What did we last talk about?
I'll tell you what we talked about. We talked about Mission Impossible.
Oh, yeah, we did.
Yeah, we talked about some other stuff as well.
Have you seen anything at the cinema?
Yeah, I have, yeah. Seen a genuinely good film. Do you remember after I watched Mission Impossible and I said that the overriding feeling I had was that I was desperate to watch an actual film? Pause for laughter. I went and saw Pavel Pavlikovsky's Cold War. Mish, how's my pronunciation? Pavel Pavlikovsky.
We're not all Polish.
Pretty good then.
Okay.
Right, mate, Twitter's been kicking off again. We've got 6 genuine followers, but we've had a couple of actual letters through. So this is one letter, but it kind of sums up the general consensus. And it reads, "Dear Kristen and Tris." So either he's pushed for time and he's rushed this out, or he's going for the jugular, mate, by getting our names wrong on purpose. "Dear Kristen and Tris, love the podcast, but I have to say I'm getting rather fed up and I have to admit quite demotivated by your movie reviews. At times, it feels like you're making things up as you go along with very little prior preparation or thought put into them. Surely you two can put your money where your mouth is and prove to us you can raise your game by watching and reviewing a good film for once." He's actually underlined the word good, which can only be for emphasis. "Rather than a load of Marvel rubbish. Otherwise, I'm rather ashamed to say I'm tuning out." And that's from an H. Ford. Tristan, this guy says we can't review films properly and all we do is talk about a load of old Marvel nonsense. What are we going to say about that?
Wait a minute, haven't you just bought Spider-Man?
Yes, on the PlayStation. Yeah, I genuinely have. Yeah. It's amazing.
That was so pissed.
Oh my God, it's amazing. Holy shit. Can we talk about that?
Yeah,
oh my God, fucking hell.
Because I saw on Twitter, I saw like people are posting like videos and then doing selfies and all sorts of
shit. Yeah, because it's a selfie
wicked.
Mode. Yeah.
There was a dude basically doing a back somersault while jumping forwards at the same time off a building and just falling down. And it's like the same 5 seconds on loop. I was like, oh Christ. That looks like the best Spider-Man dream I've ever had.
That is a fucking joy, because one of the early upgrades you can buy is nothing but the ability to do little forward rolls as you're diving.
To buy?
Yeah, like upgrade, not with actual money, not with real money.
I was going to say,
that's fucking wet.
I was going to say, Jesus.
No, it costs £54.
Yeah, I know, but like season pass.
Yeah,
like,
I know, fuck me, like, sideways. So I hope I haven't bought it. Fuck, I've bought shitloads of them.
We'll give you triangle, circle and square, but you've got to buy X.
Yeah, exactly.
Fuck you.
Yeah, no, when they want the upgrades for free, they're fucking better not, mate. Because I am loving Spider-Man. So, yeah, like one of the, like, it's obviously like, basically, it's exactly the same as Arkham Asylum.
Okay.
Except mostly in the day and much more fun and with Spider-Man. But what, so what, you know, you got like your upgrades tree for Batman.
Yeah.
Like, what was it like? Belt,
it's like one
batarang,
two batarangs, three batarangs.
Yeah,
punches,
and like combat stuff. Yeah. And you've got like aerial things, they jump higher and all that shit. So it's the same thing that you're just drinking candle wax.
I nearly drank.
What is that? Candle
wax? I just picked it up without thinking.
Oh, Christ. So one of the early upgrades is simply the ability to prat about in the air, which is like to hold down like circle and triangle together and then do like a forward roll in the air or a backwards somersault. So I was all over that shit because I loved it. And it's a fucking joy to play this game. It genuinely is. They put a lot of money behind this game. Like, I didn't realise why it looks so polished and why it's got so much fucking cash behind it. And I was like, of course, it's Sony. Fuck. It's Sony have made this for the PS4. Sony, Spider-Man, you know, all of that shit. So it's legit as fuck.
I'm so hurt because there is nothing that has come out that has made me, with the exception of that thing with the little boy and the griffin.
What's that?
I can't remember what it's called. It looked like it was going to be amazing and then it was a PS4 exclusive.
Oh, that one.
Yeah.
Oh, that was a fucking chore.
Even I got the feeling that it just looked nice and that was it, because it looked incredible.
What's that called? Fuck.
Sloan child hippogriff thing.
Yes, it was a hippogriff.
But nothing has come out since then, with the exception of Spider-Man, that's made me go, oh, fuck, I really want a PS4.
What, the exclusive ones?
Yeah.
Yeah, no. This is, it's like, it's legit. It's a joy to play. It's the storyline that they built into it is good. It's like high quality. The acting's good.
I don't think it can be as good as Arkham Asylum.
No, it's better than that.
The writing's fucking phenomenal.
No, it's better than that.
I find that hard to believe.
This is nailed on Spider-Man, the Sony movies, and the last Homecoming film.
Okay.
Like, it's got it borders that kind of...
Does he repeat the same fucking boring phrases that you think, oh, this will never get old?
Yes, he does.
Okay.
Constantly.
Does it get old?
Yeah, it gets fucking well old. I can't play it anymore.
Because you sent me a message like at fucking, I can't remember, like midnight, going like, oh, I've just beat the shit, I've just swooped down, beat the shit out of 5 people, high-fived a member of the crowd and fucked off again. This is awesome.
That actually happened. Yeah, yeah. You just press triangle. Fuck it. just kick the fuck out of a load of goons and then just like high five someone and just zip out of there. Like some kind of spidery do-gooder.
One would say a friendly neighbourhood Spider-Man.
All right, mate, rub it in.
What about the actual missions themselves? Are you in like...
Same as Batman.
All right, so
same as Batman. Fucking derivative as fuck.
I mean, are you in GTA 3 mode at the moment? GTA 3, how old?
Holy shit, mate. Oh,
my age.
2013. GTA 3.
I feel dirty.
Fuck,
and like, old.
Jesus, I was at uni. That's like 2005.
I've got that on my iPad.
2003.
That's how old it is.
Oh,
it's
my
on my
God.
Fucking iPad. Are you in GTA mode of just like going around basically pissing about at the moment, or have you actually started doing missions and stuff?
No, I'm in Batman mode because it's exactly the same game where you basically just prat about. It says, all right, just sometimes the narrative says, oh, just hang about a bit and go and solve some crimes, like while we the main story just hangs back so that you can upgrade and fucking pad out the game time. Just like in Batman, like you'll be doing that and you'll see something flash, you'll go to it and it'll be like an obscure character from the comics gives you a load of side missions to do, like the Riddler does. You know, like solve missions. It's padding, but I fucking love padding, mate. Especially in a game this good. I'll be like zipping around, like, you know, beating up crooks, pinning them to walls, zipping down their trousers and get webbing all over their faces
can
and chests.
You photograph them afterwards as well.
Yeah, you can actually. Yeah, yeah. Anyway, where was I? Oh, yeah, webbing all over their faces and chests. And then just, you know, just getting the hell out of there.
I particularly enjoyed the series of stills you sent me while you were downloading the film. What it would actually...
I fancy buying and playing a game. Oh, I can't wait till tomorrow.
It would have been quicker.
Download.
It would have been physically quicker for you to have gone out, found a store, bought it, and come back to it.
Without a doubt, I could have just nipped to Croydon in an hour and back. And yeah, I still would have had 2 hours to spare on that fucker. It was like, what was it, like 50 gigabytes? And we all know how long a gigabyte is, but you have to talk about that. So this morning, on the way to work, just reaching or grasping at some form of optimism or some form of joy. I don't know if you've seen it this week on Twitter, people have been talking about, I have no idea why, I do know why, because the Spider-Man game came out, talking about the scene in Spider-Man 2 when he's stopping the train and the people on the train catch him.
Yeah,
after
amazing.
He saves them.
Amazing moment.
Fucking incredible. Yeah. Shit. Oh, mate, I watched it this morning. I was in tears on the bus. Like a fucking teary old fool.
They do this wicked thing where out of that, the scream where he looks like he's going to pop. That's what's so amazing.
Yeah,
he looks like
rips
he's gonna,
over his bicep.
He's going to fucking pop like Akira.
Yeah.
So good. And you hear the front of the crane, you hear the front of the train crumple, and then the noise as it starts going over the edge. And out of that just comes one solitary musical note. As it cuts to the wide and you just see the whole scene together, it's beautiful.
Yeah, it's fucking amazing. Like, again, that's the reason why one of the reasons why Spider-Man 2 is the best sequel of all time. And fucks off The Godfather 2 and all the others. Genuinely, oh shit, did I say that out loud? Yes, because it's true. And they catch him. First of all, it's a fucking incredible set piece, like action set piece before that, which starts like up on this clock tower above the city, isn't it, where he's like confronts Doc Ock and then they have a little fight. And he's dodging, like Doc Ock's chucking metal down at him. He's dodging all that stuff. And it's Sam Raimi, so it's, like, punctuated with crash zooms and whip pans and all that stuff into, like close-ups and dodging and stuff like that. That's cool. Then it fucking, just like a computer game, like, kind of levels up and becomes more difficult. Like, they move from this clock tower down onto this elevated train. So I'm on the top of that all of a sudden. Then they're fighting, which is great. You know, it's like fast-paced action all around the train, above it, the side of it. He kicks him off at one point, jumps back on, dodges traffic, webs back onto it. Then that upgrades again when Doc Ock starts chucking like people off the train into the streets and Spider-Man has to then adapt and catch them and save them. And then the final upgrade is Doc Ock saying, right, fuck this, you're on your own. And he fucks off, fucks with the train's controls, speeds it up, and then like catapults it to like certain death for everyone involved.
Just like in Batman.
Is it? Yes, just like in Batman. They nicked off Batman. It's derivative as fuck.
No, it's different because it's Batman that actually ruins stops the train.
Anyway, no, Batman was after that, though, wasn't
it? Was. So and Batman makes... He's the one who sabotages the train, not
yes,
the other way around.
That's true. But yeah, so you get like... It levels up just like a computer game, like the best sort of action films do, or the action scenes do. Or and then you get to that point where like, fuck, okay, all of that shit doesn't matter. He's got... This is like the ticking clock. He needs to save the people on this train. How's he going to do it? And it's fucking brilliant. Then the payoff of the citizens catching him and then promising that they won't reveal his identity is the two kids walk through the crowd and hand him his mask, because he wakes up, doesn't he, like touches his face like, shit, and they're like, don't worry, mate, won't tell anyone.
But it's also they play out, they extend that moment of him, I've no idea why I'm fucking standing, the hero always has to be put through the meat grinder, yeah. And just think the final top off like to that scene would be him in that battered state saving everybody and then falling into the sea. And that moment is played out just to the point where you genuinely think, oh fuck, he's about to fall, and when the hand comes out and catches him,
yeah,
it's just a little tear.
I'm sorry,
just a little tear.
Fuck yeah, I'm sorry, but nothing in that last Marvel film comes close to that kind
of
fucking...
Oh no, I totally disagree.
So good.
I disagree. No, that scene is amazing.
In the Spider-Homecoming.
I love Homecoming. I genuinely love Homecoming because yeah. See, that's the first time they've nailed... That did for Spider-Man what... that did for Peter Parker what Batman Begins did for Bruce Wayne.
Yeah.
So okay. In Batman Begins, you're not just marking time with Bruce Wayne until Batman appears. Mm. Like, Bruce Wayne becomes a fully fledged character, unlike in the Michael Keaton ones, you're always waiting for him to be Batman.
Can't turn his neck.
Or have a piss. But with Homecoming, you focus so much. They managed to nail Peter Parker like as a character, and he was fun to be with, he's entertaining, and you really felt for him. The set pieces, yeah, not quite as intense, I agree with you, as that, but it hasn't earned that. You need one more film. It needs to have a film before it to earn that moment. That moment in the first film was when all the New Yorkers are on the bridge throwing rocks at the goblin, and it's all right, but it's not.
Yeah.
It doesn't have that weight. You need.
No, because one is about four extras.
No, but do you know what I mean? You haven't built up to that character.
Yeah,
moment,
I know.
To be lifted over like fucking Jesus.
Yeah.
So I loved Homecoming because it made Peter Parker like a fully fledged character.
Yes.
And when he's been, when the vultures kicked his ass, and he's trying to push up with all that fucking rubble on his back, yep, when he's screaming and crying.
Tap X.
That was a fucking wicked moment. Like, Mission 9 really fucking felt that.
Yeah, but still, nowhere near as fucking like important as the feeling of watching that in the cinema.
Not for
Spider-Man 2.
No,
it just like, just stands out as like one of the best moments in cinema, you know. It's so good, like genuinely.
Yeah.
I mean, like top 100, whatever. The best thing about the Spider-Man game on the PS4 is that everyone's gonna revisit Spider-Man 2 by Sam Raimi. Damn.
How weird was it though that if you look at Sam Raimi's track record, how weird was it that he got...
I know.
Spider-Man as well. They say it was through love of character,
yeah,
because he'd read the comics for his entire life and he fucking knew who everybody was but his visual style is an odd pairing.
Massive curveball.
But smashed it.
Yeah.
You know, and it's this fucking enormous franchise for which he hadn't directed anything. I mean, okay, he's already an iconic director because of Evil Dead.
Yeah, but he wasn't though, was he? He was iconic to people that...
Oh yeah,
that
nobody
love,
else
horror.
Knew. Oh yeah, nobody else knew his name.
And westerns.
What, if you count The Quick and the Dead? Is
yeah,
that it?
Exactly.
Jesus.
Yeah, you're right. A massive curveball from Sony. Was it Sony? Was it anything to nothing to do with Marvel back then? Was it?
No. Well, Marvel, if I get this right, Marvel didn't have any money, or at least not in terms of the fucking level you would expect, because they'd sold the rights to X-Men.
Yeah.
They sold the rights to Spider-Man.
Yeah.
And then they used, when Spider-Man became, you know, these are billion dollar movies, and they were also the only superhero movies. I mean, it'd been Blade, it'd been X-Men, then it was Spider-Man.
Yeah. Yes. So
For the superhero renaissance.
Yeah.
And then they started accumulating, they had enough money to then start, you know, their own studios, which was the game plan yes. for all along. Mm-hmm. And now they're in the position of they want to bring Spider-Man back into the fold.
Yeah, well, they did. Yeah, yeah.
But they did to a degree. They've got the deal they have with Sony is that Sony can continue to make its own Spider-Man pictures, but they have to be in a separate. They can't. They're not part of the Marvel Universe at all.
What? But no, but they can't have Spider-Man though in it.
Yeah,
can they?
Yeah, they can have Spider-Man.
Oh, that's going to be a mess,
isn't it? In it.
Oh, speaking of hot messes, you're talking about Venom, aren't you?
I'm not.
That's the Spider-Verse.
Yeah,
that Sony owned.
Yeah, but I'm not going to talk about it at all.
Why not?
Because I don't care.
She doesn't care.
It looks
What do you mean? It's got Tom Hardy, the greatest actor of all time.
Tom Hardy, apart from
Kenneth Branagh, the greatest actor of all time.
Tom Hardy looks bent
for people with masks.
He loves masks.
But the trailer, like, what was that bit at the end of the trailer? Like,
I'm going to eat your legs, I'm going to do this, I'm going to do this, I'm going to do this. It's just got no rhythm to it.
And
at
then
all,
they say that, like, and then you'll just be like a turd, like, hanging in the wind from string. Like, what, is that an outtake? What the fuck is that? Is that actually going to be in the film?
I hope not.
Jesus Christ.
But turning Venom... Venom's not really an anti-hero, is he? It's never come across that way to me, because that's
not
what they're
all.
Trying
it's
to...
It's just a boring, like, normal villain. All we remember it from is the amazing Spider-Man cartoons as a kid. How'd you like that? H. Ford. What about that for a fucking actual review? So I saw Cold War. Pavel Pavlikovsky. Previous films include Ida and My Summer of Love, which starred Emily Blunt and Paddy Considine.
Okay. That's an odd pairing right there.
Yeah, yeah. Both, like, critically acclaimed. That, I think that won, like, Best British Film at the BAFTAs when it was released.
Why isn't Paddy Considine a bigger star?
He's fucking brilliant, isn't he?
He said that he was called the British De Niro ages ago.
British De Niro.
Yeah.
But maybe it's his own choice. Like, maybe he's just, like, is comfortable at, like, that kind of British indie level.
Because he's directing. He's writing and directing now as well.
Didn't he direct Tyrannosaur? Yes, he did.
Find that out.
Yeah, have you seen that?
Yeah, it's fucking brilliant. Because that was the first time Olivia What's-Her-Face
Coleman
was like playing it straight as well. And the Scottish dude, the guy who's in Trainspotting.
Yeah, is, yeah.
And because he's in Ozark now.
Is he?
And he's your mother superior.
Yeah, because he might have directed Tyrannosaur.
So this is just coming from Adrian.
What?
Oh, shit. How could Shane Black doing a Predator film turn out so bad?
Has he just seen
it? It's just come out. Yeah, he always messages me when it comes out of the cinema. Fuck me. Written by, directed by Paddy Considine. I had no idea. Fuck, it's a good film. I've only watched it once because it's heavy. It really is.
Yeah, so both his previous films, massively lauded. So best film, best British film at the BAFTAs. Ida won best film of a foreign language in the 2015 Oscars.
And he directed Tyrannosaur as well, didn't he?
No.
Written and directed?
No, that's Paddy Considine.
Okay.
Anyway, so yeah, Cold War is set in post-war Poland. It begins with a government-led incentive to recruit musicians from the Polish countryside, which is it's a true story in that respect. So post sort of like 1949, The government sent out kind of like recruiters to recruit like traditional music acts from around the countryside to bring them into cities and kind of like promote traditional Polish values. So two people, Victor, played by Thomas Kott, and Zula, Joanna Kulig, looking at times like Monroe and at other times like a typical noir era femme fatale, operate as recruiter and performer alike. So during the first act, Victor and Zula fall in love and the film plays out over the next 15 years, dipping in and out of their lives together and apart from each other. So the central relationship stirs up a collection of cinema memories from Bogart and Bergman in Michael Curtis's Casablanca to Jean-Paul Belmondo and Gene Seberg in Godard's 60s classic Breathless. In fact, I think that personally, Pavlikovsky's film has the appearance of a movie plucked directly from the BFI's archives. Breathless, 400 Blows, and Carol Reed's The Third Man come to mind, with that 4-3 framing and a slight softness to the picture. It looks 60 years old, like not quite period, but firmly French New Wave. Take Breathless, itself a callback to film noir with a central character obsessed by Bogart, where petty thief Belmondo meets and befriends an American actress played by Seberg. In that film, the two become lovers and traverse the streets of Paris together all the time, knowing that Belmondo's character has been hunted by the police. Eventually, she turns him in and he runs until he is caught and ultimately killed. That act of betrayal is mirrored in Cold War when Zula, the female character, arranges to flee the shroud of Stalin with Victor, abandons him, effectively leaving him at the altar, forcing him to face the repercussions of betraying his homeland later in the narrative. So that core theme must resonate, I think, with Pavlikovsky, who dedicates Cold War to his parents, whose own relationship mirrored that of Victor and Zula. Back to the film, and that betrayal is itself foreshadowed by a confession by Zula to Victor during an outdoor scene together, when she actually confesses that she's been feeding information about themselves to the governing officer. Victor's visibly angered, but Zula shuts herself off to the world and plunges out of the frame into a nearby river. When Victor rushes to save her, he's greeted with a scene of tranquility. Zula floats gently downstream, bathed in glowing water. She has to shut herself off from the outside world and from Victor. Cold War addresses a number of key themes, namely the complexities and nuances associated with finding love, the lead character's very much male experience of life, told in altered or alternate vignettes, act as metaphors for his relationship with Zula. Victor leaves his native Poland behind for Paris, and this abandonment is revisited on him by Zula, who reneges on her promise to run away with him in the film's first act. When the two meet again, it's in Paris at a time when Victor is settled yet unsettled. He has a girlfriend. Zula reveals she has married, and that's that. Yet as they depart, she turns and runs into his arms, and we watch their love reignite on the starkly lit Parisian streets like so many on-screen couples before them. So they depart, and the screen cuts to black, giving us time to jab an arm into the narrative and force open the doors just wide enough to fill the frame with our own ambitions for that couple, a trait which repeats itself throughout the film. When we next meet Victor and Zula, we watch them hook up for a longer period, and we begin to see their love tested. They're dragged in different directions by different wants, needs, and demands. Zula embodies an independence and headstrong attitude so often embodied by many an Eastern European woman. However, her lack of attention from Victor, who is busy trying to plant himself into the Parisian artistic set, brings out the most destructive force in her. They break again, and when we rejoin Victor, he's alone. The final act delivers something unique in a cinematic experience: hope expressed by the characters and despair by the viewer. It will stay with you long after the narrative fades to black. Overall, it's a wonderfully made film, at times very moving, boldly directed and beautifully shot. I give it 3 out of 5 stars, so not quite as good as Avengers Infinity War, but much better than Ant-Man. That's my Cold War review. Is that what you want? Is that what everyone wants, is it? Do you want more of that? Every week. That's what people are demanding from us, mate. Yeah, that's what they want to see every week,
you know? I like winging.
You've got to understand that most of these people are unstable. Our fan base is awful, you know, deranged even.
With Wubba Lubba Dubda. Now that's a fucking segue.
Have you heard of a fresh new show called Rick and Morty?
No, mate, I've no idea. What is it? What is it?
Well, do you not remember? I showed it ages ago.
No, sorry.
Yeah.
It's on Prime, right?
Yeah, probably. No, I showed you an episode. It was the one where he turns himself into a gherkin.
Yeah. The where he fights cats.
That was it. That was a good one, wasn't it? Hey, mate, I finally watched Rick and Morty.
You have, and I've enjoyed getting all the texts.
Oh, yes, I text you a lot, don't I? I like to tell you, let's keep you updated on how I'm getting on with just life in general, but especially when it comes to
quality children's animation, four years
too late.
Yeah, but it's nice because it's something that you want to smash through, and you can. The problem is there's only a finite amount, and you start getting towards the end, and it's like, oh no, there's not many left.
Yeah, no, but it's the first time in about since The Sopranos was on TV when I'm actually up to date with something that hasn't already finished.
And so, now you're in the position of waiting to see what happened next.
I haven't had to, like, I've unboxed Breaking Bad back home on Blu-ray.
Have you not even
opened it on Blu-ray?
Two of the greatest programs that have ever,
Game of Thrones.
That have ever been on. Game of Thrones and fucking Breaking Bad.
Yep.
The only two programs I watch with my dad.
Yes, exactly.
My old man won't watch anything.
He will.
No, he won't. And tried to get him into anything quality.
Mm. Well, that you see, therein lies the problem. No one can get their dads into anything.
The dads have to get you into shit.
Yeah, so you need to sort of like tiptoe around stuff and plant the seeds, like go all Inception on it. Don't mention Inception around dads. Fucking hell. And then they have to come to you saying, oh, I've heard about this really good thing. Yeah. It's called Lovejoy. it's really fresh. It's about a detective who's into antiques and shit.
Oh, come on, Dad. Oh, everyone hated Lovejoy for our age for the same reason. It's because most people only have one TV. And it was probably the only program your mum wanted to watch for the entire week.
Oh, God,
and yet... You still got pissed off with her because she watched it.
And Songs of Praise, mate. Leave that one out. Come on.
Songs of Praise, fuck off, as if.
Right off.
As if.
You obviously haven't met my mum. So, I've done Rick and Morty.
Did you appreciate what I was on about in terms of the fucking writing? What I love is when they get deeper into the seasons and they start fucking with the rules that they've already created. Like, for example, there's the episode where they go back to, they do like a day in the life on the Citadel after first having said what a shit idea that would be to do. It's when Morty goes up, when the cop Morty goes up to the Mortys who were spray painting.
And he
uses the term RGs as a pejorative.
Yeah.
It's fucking amazing. He's not my Rick, he's my partner. RGs. It's fucking brilliant.
That's class. And on that note, I remember my brother texted me because he's into it as well. Got him following it because he's just had a kid, so he needs something to take his mind off the
he's putting his kid in front of Rick and Morty.
Like the fear of like raising a child. And he's like, I've never seen such like attention to detail and in terms of continuity, like in any series, like devotion to continuity, and like
in a fucking cartoon,
and weaving so many threads and spinning so many plates and keeping them all going consistently, and then building on them and then referencing back to everything. There's that one episode which I don't like, which is just the clip show episode, which they even say this is, they say that,
like a clip show, but they say this is
padding.
Saw.
They say it's padding, and it is, and that doesn't work. But the
I like that one. I like that a lot.
But the rest is, it's fucking good shit, mate. Where did that come from? It's like from 2013.
What was the episode where it kind of flipped for you and you're like, okay, I'm in? Because it's not, I think the pilot.
Well, you fucking know what it is because you showed it me.
No, but I mean, like naturally when you were watching the series, because the pilot's a bit of a chore because they haven't quite got the rhythm of it sorted yet. And you're also watching going, is this improvised? Like, what's going on?
Yeah.
Christ, he says Morty an awful lot. This is boring. I mean, it took us 2 or 3 attempts to get into it.
I think it was like about halfway through the first season when you're like, oh, these guys are starting to click and I'm starting to get these characters. Like, the dad started to be funny for the first time.
Chewbacca. That's in season 2, actually. But that's,
what are we doing? Yeah, they shoot. I heard they're shooting the new Star Wars film over there. Do you think we'll see Chewbacca? What are we doing? What? But the moment I knew it was good was what I text you was that one where he meets his ex-girlfriend who's like a symbiote consciousness. It's about his failure to connect with people, above all his family, and his failure to want to allow his defences to lower his own defences and be vulnerable. And when he does that, she cheats on him, or she rejects him rather. And his vulnerability, which is something that you never see in him, you catch glimpses of it, but mainly you never see it, is sort of like laid bare. And what he does is he returns to like the stable life in the family, and he walks past the dinner table and like Jerry's playing his iPod game with the balloons and shit like that, and they'll go, oh yeah, no, Rick. And he fucking just walks, he gives in to them. He walks to his garage and he tries to commit suicide. And I was like, oh, fuck off. Now I'm going to cry on my own. Like, I can't cope. Why is he doing it? And that's when I knew it was good for the first time.
Every time he shows any vulnerability, he's punished for it instantly.
Yeah.
Like with when they go to Bird Person's wedding. Bird Person's amazing. I love the absolute zero amount of energy that went into that character's name.
Yeah.
It's fucking amazing. Yeah, but again, like the whole Tammy thing, nobody sees that coming as well. When she suddenly pulls out that she's a deep cover operative.
Yeah,
like,
fuck, yeah.
What's happening? And then Bird Person gets shot about 8 times at close range. Yeah. Rick's just like, Bird Person!
the little squanchy guy, like, fights back as well.
Yeah, squanchy turns into fucking giant Lion-O from Thundercats.
Squanchy at a party asks, do you mind if I squanch in here, Rick? He's like, of course, you can squanch wherever you want, mate. No, it's an asphyxie wank.
That fucking happens right after, not the squanchy wank, but Bird Person dying. Literally, like, 3 sentences after Rick says that he's gonna, like, my new adventure, being open.
Yeah.
And Bird Person gets fucking killed.
Yeah.
So,
the end of the second season, that cliffhanger is a joy.
It's the music cue. Yeah. What are you in for? Everything.
Yeah.
It's just like,
yeah.
I was in hook, line, and sinker for that moment. It just feels. It feels so finite, and I'm thinking, fuck, why am I caring this much about a fucking cartoon character who's an asshole as well?
Well, the first time I laughed out loud was like, just a really like an obscure kind of observational thing from Jerry and Beth. We have to like Titanic one. And
I'm doing Cape Fear.
Yeah. He's like they're packing up the car at the car park, and he's like describing being attacked, like how vulnerable Beth is, like being attacked by a homeless guy, and he's like, yeah, you know, like what if like a homeless guy came at you, like, and he had like all these weird like chapped lips, and he's wearing all these creepy like tight jeans and all that stuff, and he attacked you like that, and she's like, what? He's just like, oh, okay, sorry.
Is Pickle Rick your favourite episode?
So, yeah, it's amazing.
Didn't
he win an award? I think he won like an Emmy or something.
Did he?
I really don't know.
Did it? Fuck. It deserves it.
Yeah, it does.
See, I'm not sure what my favourite episode is. I love the house party. I think that's wicked at the end of season one.
Yes, that's amazing.
Especially when he goes out for sends Morty out for the Klaxian crystals, and Morty's so desperate because he thinks it's going to get them home.
Yeah.
And then see Rick chops them up and snorts them.
Rick throws amazing parties.
He does. He throws amazing parties.
Such good parties. Getting Swifty is amazing.
The kicking Swifty.
Take a shit on the floor. Do the bulldog. Get Swifty.
This is not a dance. Like, that's Dark Rick. I'm Tiny Rick.
Tiny Rick.
I'm dying in a vat in the garage.
Yeah, that's right. What do they show him? What, like, film do they show him? What film do they show him? They play like
Teen Wolf.
They show like Bon Iver, or they play him like Sufjan Stevens or something. And he's like, oh, he's so vulnerable. Ah, I'm dying. Get me in and push them. Connect the thing to my head. The Pickle Rick one, Film Crit Hulk on Twitter wrote about that episode like in detail. It's an amazing thought piece on that and the complexities of that episode, because that episode is about like Rick's. Is genuinely about his failure to connect with his daughter and the lengths that people will go to get out of like family commitments, and the fact that he has to confront that. In the end, he gives up and he turns up at therapy, and she injects him with the serum in the car, and even though like they've been through that therapy session and he's had that like sort of set to with the therapist,
which is denounces
which like
is brilliantly
science.
Written as well.
Exactly, it's so well written. She denounces science in a way, and he denounces therapy first, so she hits back at him and she fucking puts him in his place. Afterwards, he still has to wipe the slate clean and he can't learn from that. For a fucking episode in a cartoon where he turns himself into a fucking pickle and fucks about like in Nakatomi Plaza or whatever. That's good stuff, mate.
I like the Parasites one. I wrote 6 on here. 6 is a very important number. Shut up, Armish Cyborg. Like some of the really weird, random, a pencil vesta.
What about the Mr. Poopy Pants guy?
So what's the deal with Mr. Poopy Butthole?
Mr. Poopy Butthole got shot, didn't he? Shot him.
But where does Mr. fucking Poopy Butthole come from, and why is he real?
I like... who watch Netflix won't get this, because they're not as amazing as I am. But if you watch the intro credits for that, he's got him, like, in... They've put him in the credits. you know, for that episode.
Have they?
Yes.
I never caught
that. I know,
that.
Yes. So shit. He's like, they add him into it. So it's like he's always been there.
So it's like the Joss Whedon episode where
yes.
that was really clever when, I can't remember what the guy's name is.
What, but, Buffy?
Yeah.
Yeah, with the fake vampire guy, with the nerd.
But do you remember everyone watching that game like, what the fuck's going on? This is so bizarre.
Yeah, exactly.
Because it's not even the beginning of a season. Who the fuck's this guy?
Yeah, exactly.
And that was the spell, and it was, that was so clever, but that was Joss Whedon understanding his own format, like, and television to such a level that nobody had played with, like playing with the fourth wall like that.
Yeah.
It was fucking genius.
Yeah, that was good shit, wasn't it, from Joss Whedon?
He was the master of expectation and playing the format.
He fucking owned that, mate. That was good. So yeah, man. More over that.
Are you more or less inclined to watch the new Buffy reboot knowing that he's involved?
What, Whedon? He's not involved, though, is he?
No, I don't think
he wouldn't. He would not retread something like that.
I think you'd do it if
with,
it's
like with like and care about it.
The thing is, it can be a continuation. It doesn't have to be a reboot. It should be, because there's more than
what is it?
Well, like if you put Buffy in Giles's role, that's all you can do, though, isn't it? Really?
No, yeah, I get what you're saying. You have to. Unless he's to reboot it.
Unless he's smarter than that, which I think he is.
Yeah, but like, who's that playing for?
We know British audience. People are good guys now.
The it's older fine. Audience have grown up watching that, that don't consume TV as much as like the people that the audience that replaced them, because they've got families and kids and commitments. No, if you want to launch a new show, you want to fucking hit as many people as possible, as they did when they sold it to us when we were fucking growing up. Like, you've got to reboot it, because the only interesting story that you can pitch is okay, so there's a cheerleader, but she's a vampire slayer. So there's like this older girl who used to be a vampire slayer that's now a mentor. No one wants to watch that.
Unless she's fucking fallen off the wagon, she's an alcoholic. Like, do something with it.
Maybe.
Because we're getting the new Picard series, and I'm genuinely worried about this. Like,
You should be worried.
The prospect of seeing...
Because that's all Star Trek's got at the moment.
The prospect of seeing Patrick Stewart as, like, that character again.
Yeah.
Wicked. I think that's great. Love to see it. But with the level of writing in Star Trek where it is at the moment, bail. It's awful.
Spin it back a bit. What is this?
So they've announced that they are doing a new Star Trek series.
Great.
Based on Picard, like focusing actually on Picard.
Yes.
And it's about his life, I'm assuming, because it's later on, after the Enterprise.
Legit Patrick Stewart.
Yeah. Picard. Oh yeah, Patrick Stewart, 100% in it. He's committed, desperate to do it.
Of course he is.
So this is revisiting the character that made him a household name. Mm-hmm. You know, it's full circle. And it's getting to see Picard at a totally different stage in his life, because he's, I don't know, he's not going to be a captain anymore. He's not, don't know whether he's going to be an admiral, don't know whether he's still going to be in Starfleet. Fuck knows where he's going to be at. And that, to me, is interesting to see that again. I love Patrick Stewart playing that.
But
the last series of Star Trek that came out, but the level of writing was so schizophrenic on the last series.
What do you mean?
The worst writing of a show, period, ever, period. Like the,
whoa, shit, was it really bad? Is that Discovery with Jason Isaacs?
That was mired by lots of stuff. The effects were incredible. Like, money was spent. It's the worst kind of expositional dialogue Star Trek's bad for that. At the best of times, you like occasionally have to grit your teeth through a scene.
Yes,
like occasionally.
Yeah, occasionally.
But we're watching, you're watching stuff that goes, Captain, as you will know, we've been friends for 7 years, and in that 7 years, you're like, why the fuck are you saying? Like, it's the cheapest kind of expositional dialogue. And then,
that's how I greet you every time we meet, though, isn't
yeah,
it?
Yeah, of course. As you know, Justin, we've known each other since we were 14 when we met during this lesson. And then you'd have an episode that was fantastic, full-blown Star Trek at its best, great dialogue, great acting. And then back to the awful again. It was so...
just really inconsistent.
So unbelievably inconsistent.
Why? The fuck?
It started... The showrunners left after the first two episodes.
What?
They were... I think they were fired, actually, after the first two episodes, if I remember rightly. The first two episodes are about a mutiny. It's about contact with the Klingon Empire and a mutiny happening on board a ship.
Yep.
And the survivor of that, or the instigator of that mutiny, going to jail. being caught up and the consequences of what she's done. Right, so those two episodes are out the way.
Yeah.
Okay, and it's, we're like, oh God, okay, I'm fighting through this. Maybe he'll get better. The third episode starts with that character being shipped off to prison, and she accidentally ends up on Jason Isaacs' ship.
Yeah.
And basically, I think their transport gets in trouble and his ship's nearby. And the way everybody reacts to her in the ship, like nobody will talk to her, nobody, everyone's just kind of looking at her. It's fucking brilliant. It's totally different writer, totally different director, everything. It's like, my God, this has been upped a notch.
Right, completely. So it raises its game.
It's like the difference between, imagine McGee directs the first two episodes.
Oh, McGee! Right? Imagine, oh my God, where is he now? Whoa, should we watch Charlie's Angels?
Right, imagine McGee directed for the first two episodes and then Scorsese directed
a couple of movies.
And then Scorsese
fucks it up. Scorsese takes the reins and fucks it up.
Yeah, it was batshit. Anyway, so Picard's. Yeah, that's worrying me.
Jean-Luc Picard.
Captain Picard is not gay. He's British.
What's that? What is that a line from? Actual Star
that's,
Trek.
That's from Fanboys, I think that was.
Why is everyone banging on about the Orville being better than Star Trek? What's the Orville?
Okay, so the...
Is that a Black Mirror episode? No, hold on. There's three things here.
Okay.
Black Mirror episode, don't know what that is. Seth MacFarlane, is that the Orville? Yep. And actual Star Trek.
Right.
Teach me.
With that Star Trek... Not only is the writing fucking diabolical, etc., the tonal shift is so unbelievable.
Oh.
Because Star Trek is quite twee. Through the nose, Chris. Come on. Through the nose.
Just as I took a drink, you come out with that. Oh.
I mean, it is twee. Come
on. Fucking twee, mate.
You know, it's yeah. It's family.
It can be a
it
little
can be
twee.
A little twee.
Okay. Yeah.
It's family viewing.
Yeah. It's gentle.
Yeah. And this new series, fuck me, was not that at all. And there's somebody being like raped and like all sorts,
God,
raped
here we
and
go.
Tortured
fuck's
and
sake.
Also like, it was fucking brutal in right. places. So, what the Orville? Is
yeah,
the Orville is Next Generation. It's right. Literally someone. It's what's his face trying to do.
Seth MacFarlane.
Thank you, Seth MacFarlane.
And the guy that looks like Matt Damon that isn't Matt Damon. No,
no
wait, is that
no,
the Black
that's
Mirror?
In the Black Mirror episode.
Do you see? Do you see what I'm saying?
The Orville's refreshing because it's actually it's more Next Generation.
But is it a piss take? Is
kind
it an homage?
Of,
is it comedy?
Of, it's more of an homage. It's kind of poking fun. It's optimistic, which is one. No, but that's another thing.
Like, don't get that in Star Trek.
No, but Star Trek, like, Next Generation is a fucking egg twee and optimistic. It's like the future's coming, the future's bright, and we'll all be happy. Like, it's yeah. It's about utopia. And again, this new fucking yeah. Star Trek. Ooh. It's what, in fact, it's what everyone was expecting this new Star Trek show to be.
Has he set the tone? And has he set the tone wrong?
No, this is way darker. This is somebody taking Abrams visual style,
yeah,
but tonally going off the deep end.
But why are they taking his visual style then? It must have had some.
No, because that's the visual styles is what's brought a new generation to Star Trek.
Oh, what you said that? That is incredible. Oh, just suck me off. Just pop it in.
Pop it in. Wiggle it around. Pull it out.
Just twirl it around.
Just wipe the end of it on a towel
in that cavern of a mouth.
They've kept that. They've kept that style, but they've taken the tone. It's like fucking Hannibal.
What?
In terms of darkness.
What I love
not
about...
Not in terms of cooking really slowly.
What I love about Hannibal...
Boom, 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 boom.
What I love about Hannibal is the slow cooking bits.
I mean, it's why I wanted to watch a show about Hannibal.
No, don't say that, because I like those bits.
But they...
It keeps coming back.
Went off the deep end with that as well. They started thinking that's why people were watching the show. And
that's
you got
why I was watching it.
Ever-increasing slow-motion shots of salads being tossed and wine yeah. being poured.
Foie gras being roasted.
Oh, cream friche.
Cream friche.
That same dude went off and did a whole series that's just that.
Have you
tried to watch American Gods?
Yes, I have actually
God,
tried to watch American Gods.
Visual wank.
we got half an episode in before knowing that we couldn't go any further, which is exactly what happened in Moon, except it's a bloody feature-length film, so we're there fucking...
Oh, Moon's not really... Moon?
Mute.
Oh, Mute.
Mute?
I was going to say.
No, Moon's good, mate. So, what's the Orville?
So the Orville is Next Generation.
Yes.
Kind of poking fun at itself.
Made by Seth MacFarlane. But Family Guy Seth MacFarlane.
But made by Seth MacFarlane with the focus on... optimism, science, and doing the stories that Star Trek wasn't doing.
Shit.
And I think it's just coincidence. It's coincidence they both came out at the same time. It's not a reaction to.
But did you watch it?
That.
Was it good?
Yeah, I enjoyed it. Lots of people. Lots of people didn't like it, and it's not like ha ha funny. It's not laugh out loud funny. It's not what you would expect from Seth MacFarlane.
Yeah. So,
it was more kind of. I was about to say dramedy, but it's not that. I think it's kind of, it just hadn't quite found its mark.
Galaxy Quest?
No. Galaxy Quest has got gags in. Yeah. It's more kind of like he wanted to do Next Generation his way.
So he's doing it, so he's playing it straight then. He's like, he's having a go.
I wish I could articulate it. I need to show you an episode of it.
But it's legit, right?
Oh, yeah,
It's not a piss take. It's not a homage.
It feels like Seth MacFarlane wanted to do his own version of Star Trek from that era.
Because like, he loves science fiction, doesn't he? Mm. Like, have you seen that interview where he interviews George Lucas?
No, I don't think I have.
Oh, it's ridiculous because, like on one hand, it's like it's quite affectionate because Seth MacFarlane clearly is a massive Star Wars fan, and he did that Star Wars Family Guy shit, didn't he? Yeah. Blue Harvest or whatever it was called, and so that's great. It's like, oh look, he's a genuine like sci-fi geek, but on the other hand, he's fucking wanking all over Lucas whilst talking about episode one. The Phantom Menace. And you're like, Seth, mate.
Easy.
It's fucking Ash. I know you like him, mate, but...
Easy.
What the fuck is going on here? So, he clearly does have, like, tremendous affection for science fiction.
I enjoyed it. There's the first few episodes, again, it's early on, it's finding its feet, he's trying to figure out what it is. Yeah. There's one or two episodes, like, Liam Neeson pops up in a fucking episode.
Neeson!
It's bizarre. So,
shit.
Matt Damon, who isn't actually Matt Damon...
Yes, he looks so much like him, though.
...is like the USS McAllister from Black Mirror. Which,
right.
Which won a bunch of Emmys.
Joe.
It's fucking brilliant.
Why?
The captain, the Matt Damon guy, mm-hmm. It's not... That's his fantasy. He's basically... He's a geek at a company who... They specialise in virtual reality kind of software.
Like most Black Mirror episodes.
Are you mocking the mirror? You can't mock the mirror.
No, I'm not mocking the mirror. I mean, who in their right mind would mock the mirror?
But you haven't seen this, is that right?
Have
you
I haven't seen it. No, I'm just twisting your cock.
That's his fucking masturbatory wank fest where he can be whoever he wants to be.
Yes.
Okay, so where he can be Captain Kirk and stuff.
Like the holodeck.
Like the holodeck, but it's actually in his mind.
Yes.
And he imprisons people in there. People who were horrible to him. Basically, he sucks like part of their... He'll take like a part of their personality.
Yeah.
So they're all imprisoned, having to play out the parts of... fucking Uhura and the deckhand
and number one.
Yeah, and that type of shit. And they
Riker.
Have to do what he says, otherwise he does fucking horrible things to them.
Oh shit, that sounds fucking dark.
It's so fucking dark. Like he makes one of them won't do what he says, so fucking her nose and mouth heal over and she can't breathe, so she's suffocating inside her own body, but she can't die either. So it's just this continuous perpetual torture
until
she decides
dark.
To play the role and say, yes, Captain, hailing frequencies open.
Oh, shit, that is fucking
it's
pitch
fucking
black,
brilliant.
Mate. That belongs in some kind of, like, anthology of darkness collected together under, like, I don't know, some kind of moniker that references it in the title. So that's the Black Mirror one.
So that's... But that's... referencing that, you know, it is clearly a Star Trek, like,
is it a Next Generation thing setup as well, like,
no,
same
it's
as the
more
orbit,
it's
it?
More like it's more like classic Trek, like the 60s. I mean, it looks brand
daft
new
outfits,
but it's that
bad
60s.
Haircuts
yeah.
and
acceptance.
So that's ugly Matt Damon.
No, I don't think he's ugly Matt Damon.
He's
mate.
Fucking horrendous. Are you kidding me?
No, I'm kidding. He's awful.
He woke up in the middle of the night, that leaning over you.
Oh, where's Matt Damon when you need him?
Exactly.
Nowhere.
He's being tiny and downsized.
Oh, let's go and watch Downsize.
I'd really
said
like to see
everyone.
That. Apparently, that's really misrepresented. It's the trailer's nothing like.
Oh, you mean it's actually good?
Yeah.
No, it won't be good, mate.
Yeah, I really want to watch that.
I guarantee Downsized will not be good. Okay, so that ticks off Star Trek, so we don't have to talk about that ever again on the podcast.
Oh, definitely not.
I trapped you
like
into
Marvel.
Talking about
like
it.
Like Marvel, it'll just be over. That's
Marvel,
it. We won't talk about
Marvel.
Star Wars.
That
either.
Rings a bell, doesn't
never
it?
Talk
that
about
rings
Star
a bell.
Wars. Do you know what? Watched Infinity War again the other day. So much better second time around.
Shit.
So much better.
Did you really?
Yes.
How did you find all 6 hours to
enjoyed
devote to that?
It thoroughly.
No, you didn't enjoy
did.
It thoroughly.
Did.
You
much
gave
better.
It 3 stars when we reviewed it.
I'd give it, I've upped it a star.
To 4?
I've upped it a star. Watch no. Solo again as well. Solo.
Up or down a star?
Yeah, it's still
same.
Flames.
What's that, 3?
Yeah.
3 out of 5.
Yeah.
I mean, that's fair enough, isn't it?
Do you know what? I feel sorry for that dude from The Wire who got cut out. I feel
he got
so
properly cut out.
He got, and not even because he was bad, just because they had to reshoot it, and he was no longer. Imagine that, Mum. I'm in Star Wars. I finished filming. It's going to be amazing. It's going to be out.
It's going to be. I'm so happy. Wait, there's Ron Howard on set. I wonder what he's doing. Oh no, he's cut me.
They'll put him in something else though, because it's such a colossal. It's
fucking
such a
hell.
Hard look story.
Is it?
As well, yeah.
What's your is your opinion on Solo changed at all? Do you remember when we didn't review it?
Yeah.
Can you do a mini review?
Lando's wicked. The droid's good.
Oh, God, oh my God, you're actually crying.
So structurally, it's a bit... Yeah, but it ties into Star Wars well.
Oh, God, that sounds awful. If you think about it logically, that is our episode.
Yeah.
That's the episode.
Then we should wrap this up, shouldn't we?
That's the episode.
Yeah.
If you really want us to talk in detail with a critical lens on cinema, like if you really want that, then we'll do it all the time. But you don't want it, do you? Because you heard what that was like and you didn't like it and it was too long and it was all boring. So we're not going to do that, are we? We're going to stick to what we know. Unrehearsed, unscripted reviews. We're going to make it good. Don't forget to like and subscribe on what are the formats?
Twitter,
iTunes,
Instagram,
Snapchat, where we send you a dick pic, and if you hold your finger on it, you get the whole dick pic. If you let it go, it disappears forever. Is that what Snapchat is?
I think that's all Snapchat
it's
is.
All it is, yeah. It's just an endless cycle of dick pics and films.